Welcome to Offline, a podcast about building a 100% online and remote expertise-driven business without the bullshit. Hosted remotely by me, Liston Witherell.
And me, Philip Morgan. You'll learn how we're building our businesses, what scares the shit out of us, and hear from our friends and experts who are building their remote businesses too. Welcome to Offline.
Philip Morgan.
Liston Witherell.
How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I want to give a shout out to our, I think, one listener who downloaded one episode, perhaps by accident, in Hong Kong. And I just want to encourage you, dear listener, if you can recruit one friend, just one friend, to download Offline, you will leapfrog past your competitor in Russia, who has also downloaded, I think, according to our stats, one single episode.
And I should point out, if we want to get nerdy about podcasts, we don't know if they actually listen to it. And also, it could have been a listener from virtually anywhere else in the world who just, on their latest vacation to Hong Kong, decided they had to listen to Offline.
Or who's using a proxy for some reason or a VPN in order to conceal their true location.
They tunnel-bared into Hong Kong.
Could be Dick Cheney listening to our podcast.
God, I hope so. But not only would you leapfrog Russia, if you are that one listener in Hong Kong, you would also leapfrog Venezuela, Cambodia, Georgia, Laos, Pakistan, Kazakhstan. I can keep going, Philip, but you get the idea.
Talk about low-hanging fruit, Liston. All they have to do is recruit one friend, and their status is going to increase, like, exponentially.
Yes. Do you want to leapfrog Belarus, our Hong Kong listener? You can do it. Actually, all you have to do is download one more episode. You don't even have to tell a friend.
Oh, come on. I was going for the viral spread angle.
It was more fun the other way. I'm sorry.
And you were going for the greater customer lifetime value angle. Oh, well.
I do think every time I look at, which is rare, but every time I look at these countries that are downloading our podcasts, I always think, like, what a world we live in where you and I, not even doing this in person, can reach 243 downloads in Australia. And never have I set foot in Australia. So I know I'm starting to sound like an old guy, but I do think it is quite amazing and we shouldn't take it for granted.
I think if you add up the cost of all my podcasting gear, it's probably less than the price of an airplane ticket, in fact, to Australia.
I don't know if that's the case for me. Maybe.
Yeah, you've gone even higher end than I have.
Well, and that's simply because I record music. I didn't buy this equipment initially for the purpose of podcasting, but that's the main use of it. Although, I'm not going to play it here, but for my fifth wedding anniversary with my wife, I wrote her and recorded a song.
Oh, that's awesome.
Using this very gear. So,
go to Liston Romantic. SoundCloud.com.
Exactly, where you will find nothing, but you can still tell a friend about this podcast. So today, there's something that keeps coming up, and I actually chatted with the VP of marketing at BombBomb. So what BombBomb is they were the original platform that allowed you to send videos over email, which is a little bit of a misnomer, right? You send a thumbnail of a video in an email because you still can't natively embed videos and emails, but that's what they did. And so he's obviously very bullish on video. And I sent him this question over LinkedIn because he had posted something similar. I said, do you have any data about the differences between in-person versus virtual meetings? So how much better is it, basically, is what I wanted to know in person.
Great question.
I don't want to telegraph where we're going with all of this, but the key question today is, what are those differences between in real life, being physically in the same place as someone, versus online? And we're going to cover those, but what I thought was interesting is he gave me this sort of mealy-mouthed, well, it depends, and there's pros and cons, and that kind of thing, which is probably the kind of advice we're going to give today, but I just thought it was interesting that he was promoting this as, like, there's, like, a clear difference, and it, as you're wont to do on social media, making this really strong stand. But then when I emailed him about it, to his credit, he recorded a video and sent it to me, which was on brand for BombBomb.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting that there wasn't a clear answer, and I haven't been able to find clear data to separate the two. And my belief, Philip, is this problem of trying to test one versus the other is a pretty new. I remember in the 80s, there would be, do you remember the show Max Headroom?
Yes, I do. Of course I do.
We should play a clip here, but we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was like the super futuristic, like kind of weird caricature. And in that show, occasionally they would have like video calls. And I was like, oh my God, can you imagine when our phones have, like, no one could even imagine that computers would be the portal, not your phone. Like, phones would be totally irrelevant. But back then we thought about it that way. And so this has been a relatively new development to even ask the question, how does virtual compare to in real life? I think that's one thing. The second thing is very hard to test. So I asked you the question recently, are you aware of hard empirical evidence that telling stories is more powerful than data-driven analysis, which is sort of a key question in all communication, but definitely in marketing. And you and I were both like, yeah, there's stuff, but it's not super convincing, but it seems obvious enough that that's the case. So what we're going to attempt to do today, Philip, is answer for all of you dear listeners out there, what are the trade-offs if you decide to do an online first marketing push or networking push? And I think in particular, the sort of one-to-one communication, how different is it in person? And I know you have an anecdote based on an in-person event you attended recently.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of tagging on to what you said about this being a recent development, I think it also has something to do with like air travel becoming more affordable or more accessible. So I sort of think of these two lines that are maybe converging or maybe they're going to cross at some point. One is the quality of a video call, like with broadband penetration and mobile devices and just this sort of combination of factors. They have made video calls better. They're not perfect, but they've made them better. And then at the same time, the cost of air travel, I think, has declined over time. So now it just, there are these situations where you really do have to wonder, is this worth traveling for, or should we handle this with some sort of remote collaboration involving like a video call? That's kind of how I think about it. And like you say, 10, 20 years ago, that question would not have been a question anybody would ask because air travel was more expensive, video was crappier. So there was a kind of chasm between those two. Anyway, yeah, I have a story about this. It's just something that just totally flipped how I think about this. So back in January of 2019, also January of 2018, David Baker invited me to attend an event that he does pretty much every year, which is a two-day seminar where he's teaching about positioning and lead generation. So there's this kind of a topical overlap between my area of interest and focus in my business and something that he also does. And I went both years, really enjoyed myself both years. And I have no idea if David listens to this, but I think he would probably agree with my assessment. The first year, I think he was just kind of sniffing my butt, right? Like, that's my joking analogy for what we all do, not just David, but all humans. You approach a stranger, someone who might be a colleague, might be a competitor, might be something in between, with a certain amount of curiosity, but also a kind of trust but verify kind of curiosity, right? A sort of like maybe a cautious optimism that they're a good person, but also you're just kind of checking them out, right? So I call that sniffing somebody's butt. And when I advise my clients who are perhaps moving into some new area of focus in their business, when I advise them about how to learn about that new area of focus, I always recommend they talk to their competitors. And I say about, and this is based on some data, it's not totally scientific, but about half of them will say yes to talking to a competitor. And I say, part of the reason they do that is they want to sniff your butt. Part of the reason is they just maybe just want to help a brother out, pay it forward. Life's been good to them. They want to help somebody else out. They're not afraid of competition. So anyway, the second year I went to this same event, it was not a butt sniffing experience. It was more of a like, hey, you're cool. Come back. And I kind of was invited more into the inner circle. I was invited to dinners that I was not invited to the first year. I was just sort of seen in a different light. And some of that is, you know, the fact that I was who I am, which is trustworthy and above board in the time in between those two times that I met David in person. But some of it, I think, was just being there in person and being able to make jokes without worrying that they're going to be misinterpreted over email or without, I don't know, there's just, this is where I just kind of devolve into hand waving. And I'm like, I don't know, man, there's just something different. You just got to experience it for yourself. I sound like someone who's tried a drug for the first time and is like super excited about it. Mm-hmm. Dude, you got to try ayahuasca. It's just amazing. But it really is different. And it really is, it's a different experience when you're there. An old business partner of mine said, when you can like smell each other or like smell the other person's pheromones, there's just like a different kind of communication channel that's open and able to pass information. So that's my story about that sort of IRL experience that just really totally changed how I see that whole thing. And now I see the value. I really do get it. A client of mine was talking about having a similar kind of experience of like the value of the right kind of IRL interaction was just so massive. And he has a client that's like an ongoing client, and they sort of surprised him by inviting him to a meeting very far away that he had to travel quite a distance for. And they just assumed he would be there. But to him, he was like, oh, wait, you want me there? So he made it happen and probably got another year to two of work out of this experience of just being there and being himself and obviously being excellent at what he does. But the key thing was he wasn't on the end of like a Zoom connection. He wasn't dialing in with, you know, I know international phone calls are not staticky and low quality like they used to be. But still, there's that feeling of like, oh, this is the person who couldn't make it. This is the person who didn't value actually being here. And so we just hear their voice coming through a speakerphone. Mm-hmm. So I've seen it happen with other people, this sort of flip of like, yes, it was a massive pain in the ass to get on a plane and go there, but it was so worth it. And then the third thing, I'm just piling up the anecdotes here. In a recent interview, like I listened to pretty much all of the interviews David Baker does because I really just enjoy hearing how he thinks. And one of the things he said is that he can pretty categorically say it will limit your career success if you're unwilling to travel. And that really got me thinking. So I'm going to shut up, Liston. What do you think about all of this?
I think lots of things about this. And let me start before I even say anything. I think it's worth noting that I have shut myself in a cave and mostly did online exclusively, especially since I moved to Portland. I've done almost no in-person networking. Like I've gone to a couple events here and there, but I don't like doing that.
And for context for listeners, when you lived in Marin, you could just drive across a bridge and sort of have access to pretty much the whole tech scene as it exists in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't the primary driver of my business, but I certainly did pick up clients and meet referral sources. So I'll give you an perfect example, right? A friend of mine ran one of the most prominent startup meetup event businesses. And so he would have weekly events, and he would also have marketing conferences. One of them called the Growth Marketing Conference has grown to be quite big and well-known. And like, I don't know who his partner is on one of those businesses, but he also now runs a content site. And anyway, he creates and organizes a very large audience. And so when I was there and we sat down and talked, and I met him early-ish in his career, he already had some great things going on, but he's made a lot of progress since then. But he would send me free tickets and just like, hey, come out. We're going to have this networking thing or whatever. And at one of those events, I talked to a guy who I didn't feel I hit it off with at all. He was a VC and he was invested in a couple companies. And when I talked to him about what I did, I said, hey, I might have some ideas for one of your portfolio companies that has sluggish growth and you're afraid you're going to lose all your money on. And he highly recommended me to the CEO, who I then went and met in person because they happened to be in LA. And so I thought, well, I'll go and present my proposal in person. Just be nice to make the connection. Well, I got the contract, right? And what I've found is the depth of the connection that you can make in an equivalent amount of time is just, there's no comparison. So if I could sit down with someone in person for 30 minutes, whether it's a potential client or a referral source or an industry authority, like who, it really doesn't matter, whoever it is, the level of the connection that I can have in 30 minutes sitting next to someone at dinner or being on a panel with them in person versus doing a webinar with them, it's just, there's no comparison. And maybe anybody listening to this may be going, wow, that's so fucking obvious. Tell me something I didn't know. And if that's the case, fine, right? Continue to do it. But what
you get it. But in a way, I feel like you and I are talking to some past version of ourselves, or certainly I had a sort of almost dogmatic opposition to travel when I just felt like, why do that? You can do it so much more efficiently through a video call or lower cost or whatever. It's less disruptive to your schedule.
Well, we're going to get to that stuff because I think all of that stuff is true. But it's funny, in the last time I had a day job, I was doing business development and marketing for a consulting company, and all of our business was done that way. It was all handshakes. It was all, I forgot what state we're in, maybe Louisiana is thinking about doing this program that we can help them with. Okay, we're going to send three people on a plane to go meet with them and sit down in the governor's office. So I think there's a couple things going on there. I think one is we're just evolved for that. Humans are not evolved for the technology we have now. And we're highly social creatures, and the social bonding happens in person because there were no computers at the time we were evolving. So maybe hundreds or thousands of years from now, there'll be no difference between the two, right? We'll be able to bond just as easily. I kind of doubt it because it's a much higher bandwidth communication channel in person. There's way more information happening.
And I want to jump in here as the introvert in the room and say, none of this is true if you're an introvert. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually all equally true, even if you're an introvert. Like, that was another aspect of this experience in January when I went to Nashville. It didn't matter that I'm somewhat shy and reserved and introverted. Like, it's exactly what you said. It doesn't seem to be like, well, that's all fine and good for extroverts, but for introverts, it doesn't work that way. I would disagree with that. I would say it's the same no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with that. Also, I am an extrovert, at least according to Myers-Briggs and various other personality tests.
And me. Also, according to me, you're an extrovert.
And according to you. We all know you are the authority on this topic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's my other line of business. Anyway, go ahead.
Even though I'm an extrovert, I really hate networking events.
Right.
I think they're predicated on, well, maybe not predicated, but they're designed to have people behave in a way that's like totally unnatural, generally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there, I need to knock your socks off in a couple minutes, or at least that's how a lot of people approach these events, is like, yeah, I need to be impressive, I only have a minute of your time. And then you have the people who like just go and pitch you right off the bat, and you're like, whoa, what was your name again? Like, how about we get a drink and like just hang out?
I'm Mr. Pitchy McPitch Pitch.
Exactly. So coming from that world where I implemented digital for that company for the first time, they had a website, but like no one ever filled out the form. They didn't do any email marketing. And I implemented all of that and it worked to a degree, but still the way business is done in some industries, and this is the big point, is in person. And the way high-end consulting is sold is in person. And there isn't a great way to shortcut that, I think.
It reminds me of one of the tips that I've heard about interviewing people, which would apply for an in-person interview only. And this might be illegal. It might be outdated. I don't know. Here's the tip. The tip was, you're the person doing the interviewing. Walk the person out to their car so you can see the state of their car. Is there a bunch of shit piled up, disorganized in it? Does it look like, not to diss on someone who's ever had to live out of their car, but does it kind of look like they live out of their car, or has it been not been washed in months? The thinking behind this recommendation is you gather information from a different channel than what's available to you while this person is sitting in front of you. Like, you've got their resume, their recommendations, and sort of how they show up during interviews. And you're information starved, right? So you're trying to get more information. And this was an interesting, at least, recommendation for doing that.
I made the comment about even video being relatively lower bandwidth to being somewhere in person. So if I go to a client's office, I can see what they put on the walls. I can see where the office is located. I can observe how it's situated relative to the city. Oh, you guys are all the way out in the burbs. Do people have to drive here? Like, what's that like for your personal? I mean, there's all kinds of things that I just wouldn't have access to.
Yeah, it's all this additional information.
Now, on the other hand, too, the other person gets a much higher bandwidth version of me. So one of the jokes I always make to my wife is sometimes I take calls and I haven't like totally gotten dressed for the day. And so I'm like, oh, I'm the weatherman today because I have a nice button-up shirt and basketball shorts on. And no one's going to know, right?
Hey, man, at least you've got something on down there.
But if you're in person, people are going to be looking at you like, what is he wearing? Does he have a leather bag or does he have a backpack? Does he like right. All of these other things that just aren't going to be present. And I think the amount of information that we glean, and I think most of us aren't aware of it until we think critically through this, but the amount of information that you can glean in person is just so, so much higher. I mean, I would say it's exponential.
Yeah. So I think there's two things going on there. One of my sort of pet theories is that when we do things that are more socially risky, it makes it possible to build trust faster. Doesn't guarantee that it will be built faster, but it makes it possible. And I think what does that is the recognition that's probably not fully conscious for most of us that getting up on a stage is socially risky. It's not going to risk your life and health, but it risks status or it risks how you're perceived. So it's socially risky. Or, you know, giving a presentation to a group of people in person is more risky, perhaps, than doing the same thing in front of a webcam. So there's that going on. There's like this sort of almost instinctual recognition. This person is doing something risky, and that must mean they're courageous, or that must mean they have confidence in their abilities. And that's, I think, what creates that sort of faster ramp from not trusting somebody to trusting them. And then the other thing is what we've just been talking about. It just transmits so much more information to be in person. And I mean, I think my old business partner had a really great point when he was like, you can sort of smell that person. It's not that you would go up and like sniff them like a dog would sniff another dog's butt, but yet you're getting these sort of subtle clues about them, and you're going to make assumptions based on that information. And those assumptions might be wrong, but that's just, like you said, we're wired for that. We're evolved for that. That's just how we work. Does that person a half a block away pose a threat? We're going to look at their posture, how they're dressed, what they're doing with their eyes, how they carry themselves, how their hair's cut. We're going to look at all these things and just make like a snap judgment about them. And that's just how we're wired. And so we're able to do that more easily, quicker, better, I think you could say, in person. And so the sort of curve of like feeling like you are in control by understanding what someone's about just happens so much quicker in person.
Totally. And you touched on it a little bit, but I think the cost and investment plays a big part here. So we've mostly been focused on all the advantages in real life. So maybe we can start contrasting those. So meeting someone as we're meeting now, the investment for us, I mean, literally, I just took the dog outside before we got on this call. And then I walked upstairs and I clicked a link and we were meeting. So my investment was pretty low.
Yeah.
I did allocate time on my calendar, but I didn't have to drive here. So that compared to, I had a podcast interview with a local owner of like an 80-person creative agency here. And she goes, oh, you're in Portland. I'm in Vancouver. Like, we should have done this in person. And I said, well, I'd still love to like sit down with you and, you know, buy you coffee and just chat a little bit. And she's like, great. Yeah, let's do that. And she knows when I show up, I had to get in my car. I had to drive there. We meet at the coffee shop. I'm giving away like half of my day, more or less, half of my working hours to an hour long meeting, because I have to get there, sit down, meet her, come home. Sort of the transactional time in between is gone. And so,
wait, hold on. The list is not exhausted. To me, one of the biggest costs of that kind of thing is regaining the momentum that you might have had. Like, yeah, you're in control of when that meeting happens, at least partially, but you're not in control of, you might have woken up that morning with this like momentum to finish that chapter on a book.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So to me, that's almost the most significant cost.
Well, I agree. It's pulling you away from all the other things you would be doing.
Yeah.
Whereas if we had the meeting online, it would have been time blocked an hour. And maybe on either end, it takes me 15 or 20 minutes to get back into the flow, but it's significantly less. It's like less than half of the investment. Right. And I think that that's huge. And also, of course, getting on a plane, you have to buy the ticket. You have to stay somewhere when you get there, if you're staying more than a day. There's a actual hard cost outlay that's associated with that. And then there's the opportunity cost, which is enormous, because unless you're well-versed in travel and also like very adaptable, and I find myself to be pretty adaptable, but my productivity while I'm traveling is just not the same, like not even close, right? As like being in my den here, where this is where work happens, everything's set up exactly the way I want it to be. I can take my laptop, but it's not the same, right? Like, I'm in a new environment. There's new smells, new sights, different lighting. The coffee sucks, like whatever it is. There's so many things that are interfering with my ability to just make it happen. And I think that's a big part of the investment also.
I agree. I think there are some individuals who really adapt to that or even thrive in that sort of like, whoa, I'm in a whole different environment here. And the more that I get into creating value through my thinking, the more I could almost envision that being true for myself, where it's less about raw productivity, or said differently, some of the really important stuff happens when I'm taking a shower or when I'm taking a walk or exercising or something, when I'm like out of the office context, I'm away from the keyboard. I mean, not that far from some kind of keyboard, because there's one on the phone that's not far from me, but I'm away from like the fixed production environment and I'm in this different sort of non-production environment. Like, I do acknowledge that that can be a contributor to ideas or new ways of seeing things or what have you. That said, it still is disruptive as hell to go travel somewhere. I'm experiencing that right now. I don't know how many of our listeners know, but I am broadcasting from Old Colorado City in Colorado Springs, Colorado, USA. My wife and I have been on the road for a couple of weeks now. We're going to be on the road for another month and a half almost, and maybe that will culminate in a move. So I'm definitely like inviting this kind of disruption into my life, and it's a mixed bag for me, honestly. But there are some parts of it that are like, I think this is maybe contributing to some out-of-the-box thinking, and I think that's good.
Well, I think there's an adjustment period, right? So like, I know for sure if I started traveling, I would on a regular basis, which we're going to cover upmarket moves and more brand marketing in future episodes for sure, because I think a lot of people will be interested in those things. And we're both currently in the thick of that. But traveling, I think, is a natural part of that stuff as well. And as I think about how I would adapt to that, I would have an assistant look for, like, make sure there's a gym that meets these criteria in my hotel and find a lunch place for me. And I would just have a lot of things lined up and like organized where I'm just like, okay, here's my pre-packed bag, more or less. I take the same thing every time. And I just cut all those decisions out that seem to take cognitive overhead right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do think, obviously, the investment is much greater. The transmission of information is much greater in real life, which is important. But one thing we haven't talked about is a major advantage of online, and that is the focus and targeting. There's some nuance there, right? So what I mean by that is right now, dear listener, if you jumped on the phone with me, I could find at least 500 ideal prospects who you would want to talk to within 10 minutes. I could find them all and I could tell you how to get a hold of them.
Yeah.
Like that's the power of online. It is the sorting mechanism is fantastic. Now that said, on the other side of it, in real life, there are these weird things called conferences. And weird people hang out in conferences, especially weirder people like conferences, like my friend Andy. And, you know, it's highly self-selected. We know a lot about the people who go to a conference. We know what industry they're in. We know what their priorities are, more or less. We know they probably like to drink.
Right.
We know that they want to get away from their job and maybe learn or enrich their career in some way. Like, there's a lot of things that we can glean from people who go to conferences. But again, the level of investment is so high for that. And there's only so many conferences throughout the year. So every day, though, online, the way that we can focus our marketing and the way that we can target the people who we want to talk to is like out of this world versus like the daily or the maybe weekly in real life kind of events are basically meetups and like Chamber of Commerce or other sort of BNI, Business Networking International, where it can be very hit or miss. And that's one of the things that I really don't like about the sort of quote unquote networking, where you just go somewhere and you hope that the right people are there.
You're making me think of the Bohemian Club, which is this weird retreat center, very exclusive for power brokers and Republicans. And I don't know who exactly goes there. That's very close to where Cheryl and I maybe used to live, depending on whether we move or not, in Sonoma County. Anyway, I could not have started the kind of business that I have without online access to all kinds of things, online access to other audiences that served as a really nice substitute for giving talks at conferences, which I don't think I would have had the courage to do as readily. And B, it just would have been way more expensive. And I, 3, 4, 5 years ago, did not know how to charge for my services. So I just flat out could not have afforded it. I want to be clear about that. I just couldn't have afforded the business development activities that I would have had to do. I mean, maybe if online just wasn't an option, then my mind would be used to thinking about business development as, okay, the way you get started is you pick the one ideal conference and you save up all year so you can go to it next year. And that's how you kind of level up your business development. Like maybe there would have been a path, is what I'm saying, that would work. But in the online world, there's so many paths that are low cost, low friction for reaching prospective clients. And then for working with them once they've decided to hire you, there's no way I would fly to Moscow to work with the two clients that I've had who are in Russia. So they've benefited, I've benefited, and it just would never have happened, I think, without online. So I just want to be real clear that we're like raving about the benefits of in-person, but my God, it's just the online thing opens up so many wonderful possibilities. So I think it more becomes a question of like, not which is better, but what's better for what purpose.
Well, and also I think how they work together. Let's focus on online for a second. So you were talking about not having the courage to get up and present some of your content or the basically the things that you think are true and are helpful to other people. One thing I didn't mention is when I did live in the Bay Area, I would teach a class on a regular basis. And also, I can tell you the benefits of in-person training are pretty tremendous versus remote training, which maybe is a separate topic entirely. But as I think about what I did there, though, I developed that content initially online. I think online also gives you this sort of training ground, is a way to think about it, where it's pretty easy, not simple necessarily, or not easy in the sense of not requiring work, but it's easy enough for you to find 20 people to show up to a webinar that you develop and you can provide and then ask for their feedback. And that's a much, much lower commitment for everybody involved, because they also don't have to leave. But it also gives you practice. It gives you reps, like swings at the plate kind of thing, which is really, really important, because I think about a comedian and how they develop their act. This is a good analogy for what we're talking about here. Most comedians, even the biggest ones, will just show up to very small nightclubs, like 20 to 50 people in the audience, and test out new material, because they don't want large rooms where everybody has their phones and they're going to tell everybody they know about it. They don't want to be in front of that room as they're developing their material. They want to start smaller, test it out, see what works, see what doesn't work. Was the timing right? Did this joke land? Was the story too long or too short? And then you take that feedback and you start to construct your quote unquote act. And for us, if we're talking about speaking somewhere, you can use the exact same model online, where you slowly develop it until you have something that's like, hey, I know for sure this is going to land with this audience.
Yeah, like guitarists used to call that woodshedding, because you would sort of go into woodshed behind the house and practice your licks. Mm-hmm. I think of like emailing an email list a lot as a form of that. It's like working out ideas, and it's a relatively fluid medium. So if we kind of think back to a time when that would not have been an option, how would you develop your ideas for some article that you wanted to put in front of like a trade journal and have them hopefully publish it to their audience? That would be the kind of that's still good marketing, but that would have been the kind of marketing that would be maybe towards the top of the pyramid 10, 20 years ago, right? But how would you get to that point if you're a beginner? Like, that's one of the questions I'm always concerned with, is like, okay, if you're a beginner at marketing, how do you get good at it? Well, you do it a lot. You practice.
Yes.
And how can you do that? All these online channels like podcast guesting or writing to an email list or countless other things are, I think, really good ways to build up and practice to that point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if you are thinking you want to go up market, and I do firmly believe that, like, I closed a deal without ever meeting my client in person, multiple five figures, and I've closed more than one, many deals like that,
yeah,
without having ever met the client in person. But I'm pretty confident that I could close more if I met more people in person for sales meetings. And so I believe the role of online, if you want to adopt a model like that, where you're moving up market a bit, I believe the role of online is a way to transmit ideas and gain awareness in order to access a conversation you otherwise could not have had. And then you can pick it up in real life. Now, I think one of the challenges here, which we haven't talked through and maybe we don't have time for on this particular episode, is if that's our goal, right? Is to start conversations and then continue them in person. If you're earlier in your career, which I think is safe to say you and I both are in comparison to, say, David C. Baker.
Sure, yeah.
My guess is David, if he gets a lead and someone wants to work with him, he's not going to get on a plane to close the deal. He's going to expect you to pay him before he gets on the plane.
Yeah, I mean, he's not here to speak up for himself, but I think that's a safe assumption.
Well, let's just speculate that. Again, I don't know what he actually does, but let's just speculate, right? Now, I think if you're trying, let's say I put together a training package for a client and it's going to be $80,000, unless I'm sort of have celebrity status, it's going to be difficult to close that, in my opinion, unless I go meet them.
I am just taking a note, listing here, to print up some business cards for you that say, listen with a real celebrity sales trainer.
Oh, God, please no.
So pretentious. I think you're right, though. So I'm looking at our notes here, and one of the points you've called out is that online is so useful for doing a sort of fairly efficient trust building.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that strikes me about this is, let's say that your average, you know, the amount of money you make from the average client is $50,000 in revenue, net, or gross rather, not net. I think with that, with those sorts of economics, you could probably then start to think about a fairly expensive sale, which might, the amount that you plan to invest in acquiring that client could cover speaking at a conference or going for an exploratory meeting on a flight. But there's all these other business models where the client value is not as high. And that means you've got to find a different way to pay for the sale or drive down the cost of the sale, I think is what the two things that you would have to do if your client value wasn't as high.
Well, back to your Russia example, right? Like the economics would never support you getting on a plane to go fly to Moscow to have a couple sessions with those people. Whereas online, they can pay through Stripe. No one has to leave their house. They get incredible service for an affordable price that can actually move the needle on their business, and you make a profit. So yeah, the economics are enormously important here. And my belief is all sales, the cost of sales is going to continue to rise in every business. And so you really, I think the natural consequence of that is the middle will be eroded. You're either going to have to compete on price, or you're going to have to compete on being seen as premium or the only, where you have an extremely higher price.
Right. So a sort of hot take on that is like things start to look more like really expensive white glove things, or they start to look like a magazine, like a premium cable or magazine subscription. I just really love how Ben Thompson thinks. I don't think that's a man crush. That's like a man mind admiration crush. Anyway, he talks about his business where the most any one person could pay him, unless they had more than one subscription, is $100 a year. Like that's, it caps out there, right?
Right.
Actually, you could pay more if you pay monthly, but if you buy a year-long subscription. So let's just go with that. It's easy to think about.
It's $100. Yeah.
Yeah. The most you can pay him is $100 a year. And he makes that work really well. And he would say by working with internet assumptions rather than against them. And to me, that just reinforces our point here, which is that online isn't just like the opposite of offline. It's a really interesting interplay between the two. And it's one of the interesting things it's done is made possible types of businesses that just could not have existed 20, 30 years ago.
Right.
And I love that. Love that about it.
I do too. And I mean, I think also like I have access, we have access through this podcast to people who wouldn't be able to hear us otherwise. I think the access, the scalability, the marginal cost of us reaching one more person is zero every day, every month. Like that will never change. And that's enormous. And so offline or online, I should say, is really good at spreading your message, at reaching people, at targeting those people. And so for instance, I'll just kind of give you an insight. As we've been talking about this, I've been thinking like, how should I apply this to my business? And as I try to go up market, it seems to me an obvious thing that I would do is generate a small minimum amount of content. And one of the things I'm going to be doing is giving away all my training for free, and then target the Portland area. Because if I need to meet with people in person and my goal for online is to just open up the conversation, I should do it here initially because I don't have to get on a plane. And certainly there's plenty of businesses that I can serve here in this area. And so I could do things online like targeting advertising in this metro area. I could do things online like scraping together lists off of LinkedIn of people who are here and asking them to be part of a survey, and then maybe seeing if there's anything I can help them with based on their answers.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one thing. And the other thing that I was thinking is bundling becomes really important because of how expensive travel is. So this is why salespeople have territories, right?
Right. Yeah.
So if a client comes to you, Philip, tomorrow and says, hey, we want to hire you for this really expensive engagement, then one thing you could do is look in that area. Are there any other companies you want to work with, and reach out to them and say, hey, I'm going to be in the area. I'd love to meet with you and see if there's anything we can do together.
Yeah. If you just, even just follow Blair Ends on Twitter, you'll see him doing that. You'll see him trying to stack up or bundle, as you said, activities based on, oh, he's going to be in Australia giving a workshop. And he'll, I mean, I think most of the time he has no problem doing this, but you'll occasionally see a tweet on Twitter that's like, hey, I've got a free day in this location. Reach out if you'd like some customized training for your people. And so that's exactly what he's doing, is making better use of his time there, monetizing those empty days that he had planned to work, but doesn't have someone lined up quite yet.
Right. Have we covered it, sir? I think we beat it to death.
Well,
I think what I would leave you with is this, just to summarize. The economics of your business really play a huge role in how much you decide to do one or the other. And the lower profitability you have and the lower prices you charge, the harder and harder it's going to be to go travel for business. But as you charge more, I think it becomes a lot easier. And certainly, it's not a question of should you do online or should you do offline. I think it's a question of how much of each you do. And that's really where your marketing strategy will come from. But there are certainly enormous benefits to both.
Yeah. And there's a sense in which being able to travel when it makes sense, or even when it doesn't make sense, but to send a signal that this is important to me, or we need to, this is important. This thing we're traveling for is important. So, you know, it sends that signal. But if you feel bad that you can't send that signal, it just means your business has somewhere to go. And using online tools really intelligently can help get you there. So they're both incredibly valuable. And it's not that you would use one or the other exclusively. There's not a either or kind of binary relationship here. It's more like horses for courses. It's the right tool for the right situation. So hopefully this conversation has been useful to folks. I think it's actually helped me just clarify my thinking a little bit just to talk through this with you. So thanks for that, Liston.
We've done it. All right, Philip, it was good to talk to you.
You too, my man.